next set of reactions will come from a young shaver that I have known for some time down in Hoosier Land. He is a man of wide accomplishments, although young in years. He is the editor-in-chief of the Alternative Magazine, which is being passed out in carload lots in the lobby. A very amusing and entertaining and a stimulating magazine. In addition to his duties with that journal, he has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Harper's, the Boston Globe, and numerous other periodicals. In 1972, he edited a research report on network TV news coverage of the 1972 Democratic presidential primaries, which is very instructive and a very valuable study indeed. He has served as a vice president, a special assistant to a former vice president who shall remain nameless. And from 1971 through 1973, he hosted a television program in Indianapolis. Most conspicuously, he was named about a year ago as the individual who had rendered the greatest public service to humanity by anyone under the age of 37 and a half years old. And he got a lot of money for that and a lot of publicity, and I was very pleased in his behalf. He's a very fine and entertaining speaker. I ask you to welcome, please, Mr. R. Emmett Terrell, Jr.
Thank you, Stan. Actually, there's a mistake there. I wasn't a special assistant. I was something like a special consultant to Vice President Thomas Riley Marshall. But that's really not true, that special assistant thing. If that's what it says there, I've been embarrassed by that. Yeah. Well, I'm terribly embarrassed. Matt Greenfield claims that when you hear a speaker talking about the media, you're listening to a speaker who dislikes what it is he's speaking about. And I gather from your remarks, Kevin, that you disrelish the media in one way or another. And I share your criticism, or your feeling toward them. I find myself in a peculiar situation of applauding some of your prescriptions, but finding myself at variance with your analysis of contemporary America. And at this point, I'd like to point out that I think that almost no prescription to the problem of the media that we might suggest, either libertarian or statist, is feasible at this time. All these suggestions are, either route would be better than the present, but neither is politically feasible. Ed Banfield, as you might recall, the back of his book, The Unheavenly City, said there are some solutions that might solve a problem, but they aren't feasible given our present political condition. I would, by the way, opt for elimination of all government involvement in the airwaves, and I would also opt for all the elimination of the postal service and the use of private carriers. I think that's the best society and the freest society and perhaps even the most virtuous society, but it's not feasible. The solution to these problems are probably short-run solutions or short-run prescriptions that will have to have the support of political publics. And bearing that in mind, I think some of your prescriptions are very sound. And before moving on, I want to mention that I think Ernest Vandenhegg has come up with an excellent suggestion on how one might deal with the problem of crime in television. His solution is somewhat feasible because it's kind of picking away at the present legislation, the present statutes that govern the media. And that kind of tactical approach to the media is, I think, the only sensible way one's going to go about easing what has come to be a particularly grave problem in America. But it's your analysis of the problem that worries me a bit. And briefly, I just want to point out why it is that I think that your mediocrity model is less than accurate. And first, I think I'd like to point out something that I think is significant, and that is that Irving Kristol did not that you say that he did, but many people seem to imply that Irving Kristol coined the idea of the new class. The new idea of the new class is a very good idea. It's something that we all ought to think about, but it's not original with Irving, and it has a long history in America. David Bazelon wrote a book, The New Class, in the early 60s. And in fact, C. Wright Mills addressed himself to the problem of the new class. The idea of these people was that the new class would replace the proletariat as a new revolutionary class, the new class being the propertyless, educated, virtuous class that these people think themselves to be. You can trace it back further, it seems to me, to James Burnham's formulation of a managerial elite, or to Burley's stuff on the corporation. It's not a new idea, it's an increasingly pertinent idea, and one that we all ought to think more about. I think that, Kevin, your formulations are, in my opinion, imprecise. And I'd like to only point out two examples. On page 4, where you say the national media are the linchpin of the knowledge industry interests and values, and this new role has lured many of the most talented members of the new class. Well, I think linchpin is misleading, and I think it works differently than that. The social seat of the new class and the matrix of the media's wrong-headed, mischievous notions is the university. And it's the university that the ideas of the media, the pernicious ideas of the media that you're complaining about are reflections of what has been going on in the universities for 40 and 50 years. And further, it's a reflection of, and that is a reflection of ideas that bubbled through New York around the turn of the century. And that's what you have to deal with over the long run. And that, of course, is what so many of you people in this room are dedicated to. And I don't think we should get too confused. If Harvard were to hire Henry Regnery, Russell Kirk, Thomas Molnar, Milton Friedman, and people of this sort, I think that we'd be a long way on the way toward hearing Walter Cronkite say something sensible. Another point that I consider a reflection of what I consider to be a confusion is where on page 5 you mentioned, and now the knowledge industry and media are taking over. To paraphrase McLuhan, the medium is also the money. Consider when Pablo Picasso died not long ago, his estate was. Why? Because he had so many of his own paintings. Rock star Elton John will bring in $40 million this year. And Peter Benchley's Jaws is worth 20 to 30 or 40 million or whatever it is. I think that you're telescoping here, I think, different concepts and disparate creatures. No doubt, creatures that have had an influence on our society, but I don't think they're the media. More precise, is our classes that have been intellectualized easily, as Bell points out, after all, they live on ideas, and it's quite easy for them to kind of drift off towards the mainstream of cultural life in America, high cultural life, which has been traditionally, in this century, left. And so I'd like to conclude, because I know we are rushed, by saying that I think that what you're facing here is a cultural problem. It's a broadly based, very subtle question of intellectual tastes. And these tastes have got to be taken on their own ground before, over the long run, you're going to solve your problem of media bias. It's an intellectual problem. And without repeating that oft-repeated line about ideas having consequences, I'll sit down. Thank you.